this man nearly had everything. He's rich. As we read the story, you might have picked some of it up. He's rich, he's young, and he's got some kind of authority. Now, I've got one daughter, three kids, one daughter who is married, and if this bloke came to my house, he's very polite with Jesus, good teacher. What must I do? He's a very nice chap, emotionally well-balanced. He's got a few bob. He's got a few bob in his pocket. He's got some natural authority as well as real authority. And so he's got a lot going for him. But look, except for one thing, he nearly got everything. All these qualities, rich, polite, young, ruler. But you see what's missing? He's not Welsh. Oh, what a shame. He could have had that shop, couldn't he? But he didn't have it. Oh, well, anyway, look, we've only got 15 minutes, so concentrate and stop laughing. Here's the question. Here's the key. All Jesus does, which is why I chose it for lunchtime, because Jesus gives him three answers to one question, all differently angled answers to the one question, to show the chap that he's asked the wrong question. But watch as we do them now, because he treats you with incredible dignity and respect and doesn't embarrass the chap. Here it is. A man came up to Jesus and asked, "Teacher, what good thing must I do to get eternal life?" Fatally wrong question. And yet, the fundamental assumption of all of us, that religion equals how good you are. Religion equals stepping up to the plate to have a better moral standard, or indeed looking down at somebody else who's worse than you and saying, well, I'm better than them, so relatively I should have a better chance with God, if he's there at all. Jesus says, wrong axiom, wrong first premise, wrong question. Let's see how he unpacks the falsity of the starting point. Opportunity 1, verse 17. "Why do you ask me about what is good?" Jesus replied. "There is only one who is good." Very simple. Jesus looks at this very nice chap and says, "Very nice to meet you. How are you? That's interesting that you ask me about good, isn't it? You're a Jewish boy. Don't we know from the scriptures that there's only one who is good? It's God. Nobody else is good. That's why we have a system in our religion of sacrifices. Isn't that obvious to you, son?" He's very polite. He could have said, "Hey, dopey, why do you call yourself good?" I'm being facetious, but he could have. But he's incredibly kind. This is where Jesus is remarkable. He can be hard with people who are cocky, and we read that, and he can be incredibly gentle when somebody says, "Could you tell me?" Nobody's good enough is his first point. Nobody's good enough. Wrong axiom. Don't even begin to think about being right with God by raising yourselves up by your own bootlaces, by somehow improving your moral capacity. You're completely on the wrong track. Well, interesting, because isn't this what religion is? Isn't this what Jesus should tell us? You, try harder, you might get in. If you go past him, you'll definitely get in. I mean, she'll never get in. Watch strike 2. Slightly different angle, but he'll make the same point. It's almost as if in halfway through 17, he steps to the side and thinks, well, he hasn't quite got me on that one. I'll try making the same point in a different way. And this is how he does it. The boy's face must have been puzzled, you see, because he's used to success. He's used to working hard. He's used to achieving what he wants. He's used to cutting a deal. So Jesus says, 17b, "If you want to enter life, obey the commandments." Ah, he must have thought, that's more like it. The commandments, the 10 commandments. Yes, I know them. Now I can do that. Well, it sounds contradictory, right? Nobody can do it. But keep the commandments. But watch what he does with the commandment. It's genius. Genius. Well, it would be. If God became a man, he should be bright, right? "If you want to enter life, obey the commandments." Yes, says the chap, basically. Verse 18. "Which ones?" He's enthusiastic now. Jesus replied, "Do not murder." I'm counting. You don't have to look at my fingers. "Do not murder. Do not commit adultery. Do not steal. Do not lie." False testimony. "Honor your father and mother." That's five. There are 10 commandments. The first four commandments, this is a bit simplistic, but they're vertical. Have no other gods before me. Don't make idols for yourself. They're almost me and God. The second six are horizontal. Don't lie, don't steal, don't commit adultery. Honor your father. They're at each other. Social. Jesus only lists five of the social commandments. Look at them again. Don't murder, don't commit adultery, don't steal, don't lie. Honor your father and mother. And love your neighbor as yourself. But that isn't a commandment. It's a summary of the six social commandments. He leaves out a commandment of how we treat each other. Now, this gets interesting. Imagine the boy now. How are you? Lovely to meet you, Jesus. Hey, I'm really interested in cutting a deal. I've heard about you. I think I could be a Christian, if that's what you call it, Jesus. What do I need to do? What's a win-win for us here? Jesus says, well, actually, wrong question. Because we can't cut a deal, because that would assume you're capable of cutting a deal with me. But nobody's up to the mark to cut a deal. Oh. But I'll tell you what, let me prove it to you. Keeps these social commandments. Yeah, good. List them. Okay, we're back on a win-win track. The boy says, he's left out, do not covet. Don't be greedy, don't be grasping, don't be dissatisfied. Don't be forever keeping up with the Joneses. He's left it out. Covet, simply interpreted greedy, but is more to it than that. It's the dissatisfaction with all that we have and are. Perhaps a profound, deep one that's not shown. Jesus leaves it out. Now all the chap has to say is, excuse me, they say you're a great teacher. They say, in fact, that you're claiming to be the Son of God. Bit of a problem here. You don't know the Ten Commandments. Could we elaborate on this? Why don't you know the Ten Commandments? Or, excuse me, you've left out do not covet. Have you left that out on purpose? We shall see in a minute that this boy's fatal flaw, however lovely he was his covetousness. He always wanted more and better. Nothing was ever good enough. He was driven to the point of madness. But of course he was still reasonably emotionally intelligent, like most of us, and we can be decent amongst people in everyday life. Well, see what he says, 20. Oh, this is fatal. He goes for a bluff with Jesus. He goes for a bluff on the deal. All these I have kept. He says, what's missing? Oh, you know, that's not good. You know, ladies and gentlemen, bluffing with the creator of the universe is not wise. If this is he. I spoke at an assembly for 15-year-old children, year 10, at Milton Keynes a little while ago. And when I walked in to the foyer of the school, there was a young boy of about 13 standing against a wall outside the head teacher's office. He looked as pale as the tablecloth. He actually looked like he was going to faint. So there was nobody else there, so I said, I'm looking for Mrs. such and such for year 10 assembly. Could you point me in the right direction? He said, yeah, that way, sir. But I had to stay. I said, are you all right? He said, well, I'm not feeling very well, sir. I said, well, look, you look as if you're going to be sick. Can I call somebody for you? He said, no, I'm just seeing the head. I said, oh, what have you done? Have you done something wrong? He said, well, I'm not sure, sir. I said, oh, you're not sure. What's the problem? He said, oh, yesterday it was pouring with rain when we left school. And so we all came through this room, it was about this big, to get the buses home because of the rain. And there were lots of people in this area, it was very full, and somebody took that fire extinguisher over there and punched it down and sprayed it over people. I said, no. He said, yeah. I said, did you do it? He said, I don't know. Now I imagine he did know. But he was going to try and bluff it with a head, right? That's what he was going to do, which is why he looked so pale. This boy goes for the bluff with Jesus. Oh my word. Now, here's the last part of the story, or part of the conversation, then we'll draw the conclusions as Jesus draws them. Strike one. Tell me what to do, because I think I'm good enough. No, you're not. Nobody's good enough. Strike two. I'll prove it you're not good enough. I'll leave out the one thing that's your Achilles heel. Now, admit to me that you've got an Achilles heel that stops you cutting a deal with me by being good enough. No, I'll bluff you. I've kept them all. Watch what Jesus does last. 21. Oh, my word, he should have said, oh, don't bluff with me, you fool. I know you're a nice lad, but this is really stupid now. You're talking to me. This is what he says. If you want to be perfect, go sell your possessions and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Now, is there anything worse to say to a tight person? Think about it. See, we must misinterpret this line. It's not saying we'd all be in trouble if we live in London today. We'd all be in trouble if wealth was a problem for heaven. Because compared to most of the world, we were all rich. No. It's very specific contextual. He's looking straight in his eyes and saying, I know you're really tight. I really know you are. And I'm now, instead of embarrassing you in front of everybody, I'm just going to say between you and me, I know that you can't keep that commandment and that you're a tight man who's never satisfied, isn't it? Well, that sounds very Welsh. Jesus wasn't Welsh, but, you know, it meant to be a rhetorical question, isn't it? Give your possessions to the poor, then you will have treasure in heaven, then come and follow me. When the young man heard this, he went away sad because he had great wealth. What he didn't do was say, now this is where it becomes almost existential, it becomes personal, particular, not just a talk for a group of people. This is where it becomes about each one of us as individuals in the room. What do I have to do to have a relationship with God that gives me eternal life? All of us are fractured. We're Jekyll and Hyde, we're Beauty and the Beast. We all are. We all know it. Even if we have to cover it up often. In fact, most of the time. That's how it goes. That's the reality of our situation. There are two types of people. Those who will admit it to God and those who won't. A Christian isn't somebody who can cut it with God. In fact, the reverse. A Christian is somebody who says, I've no chance of cutting it with God. None. And the only way I can have a deal, a relationship, a contract with God, is that he has to come into this world as the only one in his own son who did live a life that was unfractured, that was whole, that was complete, that was perfect, that kept the commandments, that a holy God himself in his son lives the human life that we were designed to live perfectly. And to become a follower of Jesus, to become a disciple of Jesus, actually, we say the word Christian, but it hardly appears in the New Testament. And people think Christian is a kind of definitive. She's a Christian, she's not. Yet the New Testament's language is disciple, follower, apprentice, learner. You're a learner at 85. You're a learner in the company and family of Jesus. You're a man or a woman who says, I can't do it. You can. You died on a cross, the perfect human, in my place, so that a deal, a contract, the new testament, the new covenant, the new contract, the new deal. Sounds a bit American, the new deal, I know, but the new deal. God and we make a deal based on the death of Christ in your place and mine, so that when we meet God on the final day, he will not judge us by the harm we have done him and others, but he will judge us by one criterion. Jesus' death pays our price so that a deal is done that is unbreakable. Christianity isn't spelt D-O, verse 16. What have I got to do? And if you know this, I hope it reinforces it today. Because you very quickly slip into thinking, well, of course, I must be better and better and better for Jesus to love me today. If you've been a Christian 20 years, you're stupid if you think like that. I'm stupid. But you slip into it so naturally, right? Well, I better not go to church. I've been naughty on Saturday. I don't deserve to go to church. I should keep away from a group of Christians because of what I did last night. Absurd behavior. Absurd. Nothing to do with the first premise of Christianity. It's not what you do at all. It's what Jesus has done. Christianity is what Jesus has done. It's not spelled do, it's spelled done. He's done it for me, and he's done it for you. And at the end of the story, the last couple of moments, Jesus says to the disciples, I tell you the truth, it's hard for a rich person to enter the kingdom of heaven. It's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich person to enter the kingdom of heaven. You'd have laughed if you were there then. That was funny. Because there were camels, you see. And there were always needles. So big camel, small needle, ho, ho, ho. You're not laughing because there were no camels in Langham Place. But it would have been funny. Okay, it would have been funny. It's easier for that to happen than for a self-sufficient man or woman who says, I think I can cut it with God. I can do it. I don't need you to do it for me. I can get in on my own efforts. It's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a person who's self-sufficient to get to heaven. Well, the disciples can't believe it. Look at the last couple of lines. 25, when the disciples heard this, their jaws drop. They're astonished and they say, well, if a bloke like him can't get to heaven, who can? I mean, he's a great guy. And it's not to say that you have to be a disciple of Jesus to be a great girl. It's not saying that. You can be a marvelous guy and a marvelous girl. In fact, you can be nicer than a follower of Jesus. Because none of us know where people start in life, right? It's where you start from that makes you what you are. No, here's the issue. And Jesus captures it in the last line. What a line to finish with. Jesus looked at them. So he looked at his followers. He watches the young man walk away into the distance, walk away from Christ. And he says to anyone present, as he says today, with man this is impossible. Now when we walk out today and go back to work or go back home or go back to see friends, it is impossible for you and I to have a relationship with God if we think it depends on how well we do and we back that. But with God, you see the last clause? All things are possible. The person with the worst track record in this room or the best track record of behavior in life can have a right relationship with God because Jesus died on the cross for your brokenness, rebellion and sin. And I will leave this room knowing that I have a relationship with God because Jesus has done it for me when I deserve nothing. And I deserve nothing now as I deserve nothing 30 years ago when I first saw that I must trust Christ. In some ways, you feel like you're getting worse when you're getting older. Do you not find this? If you've been a Christian a while, for Christians in this room, you think to yourself, well, sometimes I think I'm getting worse. Well, you know what's actually happening? The living God who lives in you keeps pointing out how concerned he is to keep changing you because he loves you so much and he shines lights in things that need changing. Oh, you're not getting worse. You've always been shocking. You're just working it out more and more. That's right, isn't it? And if you haven't started on this journey, can I say to you, what is impossible with a woman or a man to do it? Is possible with God through Jesus Christ. Now that should make you walk out of this room with a spring in your step, because all are welcomed every day because of the price to Jesus Christ to cut the deal. Let me just point out to you, I'd love you to think about coming back here. I'm a guest, I live in Cambridge, I'm in for a week. Keep coming. Keep coming for lunch and thinking and chatting. Go at a pace which helps you. And Charmaine will point you to Table Talk, which if you live near enough to here, to town, you might be able to pop in and deconstruct some of these things together if you'd like to. Starting 7th of March, and Charmaine will unpack that for you.